This is Arizona State University's Office of the President podcast for the week of April 17th, 2006. Today's podcast features Q&A excerpts from the University Town Hall with President Crow held on April 5th at the ASU Tempe campus. President Crow addresses student concerns regarding employee salary adjustments, the Herberger College of Fine Arts, Greek life, and the role of students in the advancement of the new American university. This podcast runs just over 25 minutes.
Randy Hoyam, I don't know if I pronounced the name right, of the Tempe campus says, what is the final status and distribution plan for the state employee pay raise that we should have received on March 11th? Why has it been delayed when the state legislature approved an emergency clause for it to immediately be paid to us? Well, actually, they approved the emergency clause so that they could immediately take action to appropriate it, which is different than immediately paying it. We actually have to wait for them to take that action, then plug into our own payroll system all of the necessary data and so forth to adjust thousands of employees' salary. And so it's being done as quickly as it can be done, backdated to that March 11th date. So everyone will be paid the salary adjustment that they merit from the investment that came from the legislature. But let me try to put this into perspective. The legislature has offered to the university an additional investment that assists us with salary adjustments within the university. I don't know the exact percentage, maybe Rich or Carol, maybe you know, of how many employees at the university are on state accounts and how many employees are not on state accounts. So here's an interesting thing. The state legislature, this is at 65-35, so the state legislature offers an additional investment to the university to adjust salaries of university employees. 65% of the university's employees are on what's called state accounts. 35% of the university's employees are on other accounts. They only provide the resources to adjust the 65% of the employees' salaries. We have to find the resources for the other 35% of the employees. There's no resources offered for those employees, just to put things into perspective. Those could be people on research grants, people on what's called local funds. There's all kinds of accounts within the university itself. So what does that mean? It means that we have to go out and it actually takes us a little bit of time to figure out how we're going to implement this. Now, I'm happy to say, and I hope some graduate students will listen to this very, very carefully, and I'm going to ask Rich for some details. All employees, including graduate students, to the fraction of the graduate student's employment, half-time employee would get half of what I'm talking about, will receive the $1,650 base adjustment. All employees, including graduate students, receiving half of that. $825. All employees beyond that, full-time employees, are eligible for an additional 2.5% merit increase. And in addition to that, some employees will receive adjustments on a number of other parameters. For instance, and I'm happy to say this, I don't think we've announced it yet, but we will announce it, but you can consider this a pre-announcement. We are raising the minimum wage for a full-time university employee, a full-time university employee, the minimum wage to $9 per hour. So anyone that has been at a wage below that will see their minimum wage for a university employee raised to that amount. Now, the state-mandated minimum wage in Arizona is $5.75 per hour. There is no minimum wage, which is $5.15. So the federal minimum wage is $5.15. There is no Arizona minimum wage. The minimum wage for a full-time employee at Arizona State University, effective this cycle, is now $9 per hour, which we feel very good about relative to where the institution is going and how we're moving forward. So in a salary adjustment package, we're making a number of decisions relative to all employees. And as I said, hopefully graduate students listen to this also, because in the last couple of years, not only have we provided tuition benefits to graduate students who are RAs and TAs, which had never occurred in the history of the institution, and not only are we doing that, but we're also this year adding financial aid to graduate students who are not RAs and TAs, and not only that, we're also giving a salary adjustment to graduate assistants this year. So we think of all of those as positive steps.
Hi. My name is Patricia Novelli, and I have a threefold relationship to ASU. I'm an alumni. I am currently the coordinator of communications and marketing for Career Services. And in the fall, I'll be teaching a class in art history. If we can figure out where the funding for that class is going to come from.
Yeah. Well, we found some funding for the other 11,400 classes that we have. So when you add another one, we do have to look around for the
of course.
For the funding.
I understand that there's recently been an appointment to the dean's position for Herberger.
Yes.
And want to congratulate you on that decision. And I'd like to ask what your priorities are for Dean Kim, mm-hmm. and how you see the arts sort of functioning to bring forward the new American University initiatives.
Okay.
And this question was sent to you by email too, but I have to cut out a little early, so I wanted to make sure I asked. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. So Gwanwoo Kim, the present president of the Longji Institute in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is a music conservatory, has been appointed. We announced yesterday as the new dean of the Herberger College of Fine Arts. Dr. Kim is a philosophy undergraduate from Yale University and a two-degree graduate student, including a Doctor of Arts degree from the Peabody Institute at Johns Hopkins University. He's a fantastic concert pianist, and very importantly to us, is a person of immense intellectual ability, creativity, agility, and energy. He brings a huge amount of energy to the table for us as we move the school, move the college forward. In addition, one of his first assignments as a professional was as the leader of the community arts program in El Paso, Texas, where he worked for 8 years building a community arts program that linked the Latino community and Anglo community in new and improved and excitingly positive ways. And so through a combination of his creativity through the piano, his intellect through his training and his experience, his drive and his energy and his ambition, and the things that he's learned as the president of a music conservatory in Cambridge, Massachusetts, he brings the requisite skill set to us. What are we looking for? And I'm going to turn to Provost Glick here. We're looking for all of our deans to take on two fundamental missions: intellectual success and excellence, academic success and excellence of our schools, and financial success and excellence of our schools. And so what we're looking for from him is creativity and leadership. We don't have a roadmap that we are asking him to implement. He will work with the faculty, he'll work with the students, he'll listen to the community, and he will derive that roadmap. Milt?
Try to answer by saying why we chose Gwanwoo. He brought three things together to the table. First of all, he is very much committed to the importance of the arts in their traditional forms in society and to making sure that they are at the highest standard of excellence. Second, he is equally committed to the fact that the arts must, at the same time we treasure the tradition of the arts, that we change the arts and we recognize new forms of the arts and integrating technology and other things into the arts. So he both is committed to the tradition, but also committed to the change. And third, his sets a very high priority on bringing the arts to the people, and that's the people who have historically perhaps been displaced from the arts. So as I see it, what he brings us is commitment and appreciation of the arts, commitment to change in the arts, and commitment to broadening the audience of the arts.
When any of you have the opportunity to meet with him, he'll be arriving, I think, in early August. You'll sit with him and you'll realize almost instantly that you're speaking with one of the most intelligent individuals that you've ever had an opportunity to speak with. Just the agility of his mind and his thinking capabilities and the speed with which he's able to think and bring together his planning. He, by the way, is a concert-level pianist who was never allowed to play the piano until he went to college, to give you some idea of what that might take. to accomplish in and of itself. I have another question from Karen or Karin Plummer, interdisciplinary studies major at the Tempe campus. How do you feel about Greek life at ASU? Where do you see it going in the next 5 years? Do you really feel that tearing down Alpha Drive is the smartest plan? And do you think that the Greek village will prove to keep Greek life going, when even now the fraternities without houses on Alpha Drive are pulling in smaller numbers than those with houses? I don't know what the pulling part of the question means, but what I can say is I believe that Greek life is an appropriate, meaningful, and important part of student life in terms of an option available to students who want to have that as an option for their time at ASU. We have had on Alpha Drive inadequate attention paid over the last 40 years to building and nurturing the Greek life environment, and we have reached an agreement with a broad set of individuals to receive a plan for the rebuilding of Alpha Drive. That would be a private sector, public sector partnership project that would involve some activities from the university, some potential residence halls from the university, Greek houses in the terms of chapter houses, as well as other things that would be built on that site. And so what stands in our way right now is a complete plan and a complete financial model and a source of capital to advance the project. And when those things are in place, then we will move the project forward. So there's no lack of interest or desire in Greek life. It is the case that I have outlined 8 principles some time ago for the Greek community in terms of what were the conditions under which the university would enter into these kinds of projects on a partnership. And those principles have to do with the purpose of why we would build a Greek community and so forth. And so that's where we are on the Greek community issue. There are some fraternities, I don't know how many of you even know where Alpha Drive is, but some of the facilities haven't been invested in a very long period of time, and in all likelihood their repairability is very close to zero. And so this is a sort of a restart of the facilities over there. So that's something that we're looking at.
Hi, my name is Ashley McNamee. I'm a journalism and political science junior. I just have a question. You might have answered this before, but I've never been here to hear it. Where does the student fit into the New American University? Seems like with everything that's going on, rising tuition costs, you're moving students and campuses all over the valley. Everything that attracts students to ASU as it is today is changing. So I'm just wondering what student body you're trying to attract to the New American University, what it looks like, and what you hope to accomplish with the New American University.
Okay, well, I think that's a good question. I mean, each of the elements of the design parameters for the New American University, each one of them have to do with students, have to do with the community, have to do with what the university's identity is. So for instance, if the New American University design aspiration is something that we call, one of them, intellectual fusion, what that means to a student is that you'll be able to come to a university without false intellectual boundaries, without unnecessary, historically flawed intellectual cultures that you'll have to be trapped in. It means that we are trying to build a university which is intellectually adaptable and fluid and has the capacity to link and cross disciplines. And so while it isn't always explicitly stated, the specific impact on each constituent group within the university, each element of that set of design aspirations are very student focused and have huge potential to enhance the student experience attending the university. And I could walk through each one of them, but I just took that one as an example. If I go up to the level above those design aspirations to the 3 things that I stated as the simple articulation of our goals, excellence, inclusiveness, and impact, that's quite definitive about what we want this university to be relative to students. Excellence means, not all universities, by the way, are excellent. Some are bad. Some are worse than bad. Some have graduation rates of 10%. Some have faculties that are not at the leading edge of their fields. Some have faculty members who are worse than not being at the leading edge of their fields. They're actually not very good in their fields. We strive to academic excellence at the highest level, but we do that with a condition. And the condition is that we will offer that level of excellence on an inclusive basis as opposed to on an exclusive basis. And you mentioned tuition as if that was some mechanism that we were using to drive students away. It's actually the tuition increases that have enabled us to attract more students to the institution. Because the low tuition model with low financial aid is actually a form of exclusion. It actually keeps our access levels low. And so when you look at excellence as our objective and inclusivity as our equal objective, it's the case that what we're trying to do relative to students is to find ways to plug them into as outstanding and as leading edge a university as we possibly can. And the tuition helps us to do that. As to the impact, excellence, inclusion, and impact. Impact has to do with making the university relevant to this place, making certain that the university has a high impact on this location. You do that by providing a kind of learning experience and learning environment for students. So for instance, Herberger College for Kids has large numbers of students engaged in it as a part of a delivery program to K through 12 students throughout the valley. The single largest number of employees at the Biodesign Institute, our people working there, are students, mostly undergraduate students. And those students are engaged in the research activities going on there as a part of their learning process. And I won't go through everything that's going on, but it would be incomplete to conclude that somehow the raising of tuition is pushing students away. Our application rates are at record levels within the institution. Our attendance rates are at record levels. Our growth rates of the institution are at levels that we can barely stand. That is, they're almost more than our system can take. Our diversity rates are at record levels. 32% of the freshman class from Arizona were students of color, a record for the institution. We moved almost 1,000 Hispanic students last year from freshman year to sophomore year, and 10 years ago we moved 100. Hispanic students, for instance, just using that as an example. Those are achievements within the institution that the people that have worked so hard to make them happen are very happy about. And so perhaps you could be more specific as to what your concerns are. The movements of the schools to downtown Phoenix were set as conditions as a part of a longer process. Faculty were involved, students were involved, others were involved. It may have been before you were here. About moving downtown, about changing some schools around and so forth. And so one of the conditions was that every school that moved to downtown Phoenix would end up with facilities and program opportunities superior to what they presently have, and that will be the case for every school that goes there. And so those schools will be advantaged. Likewise, the schools that are left here will have more space to work with for their programs and their initiatives. So maybe if you want to be more specific, maybe I can respond to that.
I understand your point, and I'm, as a journalism student, my campus would be moving downtown, and I understand.
After you graduate, right?
Yeah, thank God. That'll benefit me in the long run because my journalism degree will be stronger coming from this institution, and I understand all that. And I understand your model that, you know, tuition increases are actually going to help the university by doing this, but if you have students who can't afford to eat in the MU, but yet we're raising tuition, it just seems like, from the average person, that you're going to be excluding some people, you know, it's just inevitably, like, you know, unfortunately that's the way it is, I guess, but it just seems like...
Well, that was your statement. I didn't actually say that because we don't think of things as unfortunately that's the way it is. We actually work very hard to make certain that as few people are excluded for financial reasons as possible.
Yeah, and I would agree with that completely.
And so we actually go to great lengths. So we have the new program, the Access ASU program that was in the Arizona Republic yesterday for students that are from families making under $18,000 a year for a family of four. That's a very minimum level. One of the things that happens sometimes is that students and their family circumstances become very complicated. We have hundreds of students who arrive on campus and their parents get divorced. And in the interaction between the now fighting parents, the well-being of the child now at Arizona State University is not the top thing on their list that they're worrying about, and you end up with the student who comes from a family with resources, now divided in half, now trying to support two households in terms instead of one, and then the resources that might have been available to the child are reduced, yet the child isn't eligible, the student isn't eligible for more financial aid. So we do have those kinds of complexities. I'm going to ask, when you're done with your question, maybe Jim Rund, our Vice President for Undergraduate University Initiatives, to talk, but keep going.
No, I would agree 100% that this institution is excellent with financial aid. It helps a lot of us come here. It just seems like we've tried so hard to remove ourselves from the party school image that we're becoming something that is losing the sight of the students. Like, we're becoming this big research institution, but I think a lot of the students that are here today didn't come to ASU because it was going to be this excellent research institution, and maybe that's the student body you're trying to attract is
those are good
scientific
points.
Students.
Those
you know?
Are good points. Let me. I don't. If you get too many in my head, I won't be able to keep track. So first, excellence has nothing to do necessarily with research in the way that you're portraying it. Excellence is the quality of the faculty, and some faculty require what I would call scientific or heavy type research. Most faculty, the bulk of our faculty, do not. They are scholars through their expression of their creativity in the art school. They're scholars through the, like myself, I'm not a scientist. The way that I express my scholarship is by writing. And so the most significant research tool that I have is this thing, this pen, this encrypted thing locked in right directly to my brain that requires no battery. That's the most significant research tool that I require. With some books laying around. And so it's not the case that we're trying to shift the university dramatically into being something fundamentally different than what it has been for the last, 25 years, let's say. We've been in this modality. So we do $200 million a year in research. The University of Washington does $1 billion a year in research. We will never do $1 billion a year of research. We see our sort of maximum intensity of research as being dramatically less than other universities, somewhere between $300 and $350 million, somewhere in that kind of range. That will help us not to be dominated by those things. It'll help us to still keep some of the spirit that you're talking about, yet it will help us also to be of greater value to the local community in terms of the kinds of things that we're doing, in terms of setting a discovery enterprise. And also, and I think very importantly, provides enhanced educational quality for our students. That is the faculty that are scholarly intensive, are scholarship intensive, I believe very strongly are superior faculty members for our students overall. So I understand your concern, your basic concern. So keep going.
Well, I mean, there's not much more to it. It's just, I respect your vision. I respect what you're trying to do. I just would hope that we keep, you know, the students in mind as we move forward. Not saying that you haven't, but
right.
Just saying, like,
right.
Let's do it more in the
well,
future.
I think your points are good. I mean, one of the things that we're trying to do, we're trying to deal with very long-standing, complicated, psychological, cultural issues. So, for instance, how many of you have ever been an undeclared major for a while? Okay. Well, we think that's not good. Not because that's a misnomer. So we've started this new notion of taking students who are still sorting out what they want to do, and we're going to start calling them exploratory students. More positive, more engagement, more advising. Exploratory students would get help to help determine their major, to help transit between majors and so forth. And so one of the things that has our attention is the need to put many more resources on the ground in advising and many more resources on the ground to actually deal with students on a more individual basis, as well as finding ways and incentivizing the faculty to become more directly engaged in student advising.
To view a webcast of this university town hall in its entirety, please visit dmit.asu.edu/live. To send questions or comments to President Crow, please email president@asu.edu. Thank you for listening.